I moved down here and I started playing down on Lower Broadway, which is a section of town down here, which shares an alley with the old Ryman Auditorium where they had the Opry from 1940-something till 1975.
Okay.
And, you know, that's the known home of the Grand Ole Opry.
Okay.
I mean, there was a few places before that, but that's the place that everybody thinks about when they think about the Grand Ole Opry. And those places down there, like Tootsie's Orchid Lounge and places like that, you know, were watering holes for all the country stars. And, you know, that was where I really wanted to work down there. And that was my dream. That was why I moved down here. So I did. And talked Shaw into moving down here. And meanwhile, we got something going at this bar called Roberts. I met up with this other guy named Gary Bennett. And we were singing like the same 20 Johnny Horton songs. And we were kind of the new guys on the street, right? You know, the young guys on the street. So, you know, they were running a band over at Roberts, and his guitar player couldn't make it. And so he came down to Tootsie's and said, can you play, you know, lead guitar? And since I really couldn't, I said, yeah. Because I just needed a gig, you know.
Yeah.
Just trying to, you're playing for tips down there. You just need a gig. I needed, you know, I didn't have a job. I still don't. And so I said, yeah. And then that was April of 94. And we, you know, started playing then. And then when Shaw came down in May, he started playing drums in the band too, and we had a couple other guys. And then by April of 95, Smiling Jay McDowell and the bass player and Donnie Heron, who's the professor of hillbilly music, plays fiddle, steel, and mandolin. He joined the band. That was the band as it was. And we started having so many people come down that there was a line all the way from Roberts all the way around to the front of the Ryman, the old front of the Ryman, sort of like backwards the way it used to be. And, I mean, there was tons of people that were coming down to see us, and, you know, there was only a few people that were interested in what we were doing because it was country music. But we had all the crowds, right?
Huh.
And there were business people that were snooping around, lawyers and everything, and managers that were waiting for us to take a break, and we never took a break. We played 5 hours straight with no break, because when you're playing for tips, if you stop playing, people leave.
Yeah.
And so we just never did stop playing. And that always confounded people.
at that point, was it basically just a pickup band?
It was going so well. There was, you know, it was the five of us, and we were all making pretty good money down there, and there was no reason not to do it. You know, we played original music from day one, and, you know, surrounded by all these old country songs that we knew, and we just kind of sat up and played.
You didn't, like, rehearse or anything, though?
No.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, this is a shuffle in E off the five. One, two, three, four. I think, you know, people would come up and request a song. I think I know at least a couple of verses of that. You know, we'd have a new song. And that we developed a huge repertoire that way. And it was just, you know, huge crowds. And it got to be that fanfare in 95. And Paul Deacon, who's a drummer in the Mavericks, brought Timothy White down. Timothy White, who just died this year, was the editor of Billboard magazine. And he liked it so much, he said, I'm going to put these guys on the cover of Billboard magazine. And he did.
Wow.
And the next day, 10 labels wanted to sign us. And we ended up going with Arista here in Nashville.